Thanks for checking out this past Sunday's teaching. Every Tuesday, we'll release audio from the previous Sunday's message. If you want to hear the Vertical staff talk more about what these teachings mean for everyday life, a roundtable discussion releases every Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever found yourself in a position where you're just at the end of your rope? You're fearful, you're anxious, you're not sure what the future may hold. Maybe you're just tired. Maybe it has to do with your overall security and your finances. A lot of us are there right now. Maybe it's relational. Maybe it has to do with your spouse or an old friend. And even though you can trace back each step to where you are now, you know how you got to this position, you still aren't really sure how your life ended up where you are. That's exactly where we find ourselves in the story of Saul. And just in case you haven't been able to join us the last few weeks, either here in the building or digitally or either way, let me give you a little bit of a recap into the teaching series that we've called Consider the Raven. Over the last few weeks, we have been dealing with fear. We've been dealing with the fear in our lives, and we've been dealing with specifically these fears that tend to lurk in the back of our minds, the things that don't always come up whenever we're eating with friends or we're out to drinks. These don't come up in conversation. These fears are the ones that we deal with personally, but we deal with in the darkest parts of our lives, the fear of inadequacy, the fear of rejection, and the fear of the unknown. The scary thing is about these worries that while they are in the backgrounds of our minds, they have the ability to jump into the forefront of our lives. They can begin to run our lives, and that's what many of us are experiencing in this time dealing with COVID-19. Some of us are afraid of the disease itself. Some of us are afraid of the effects that it could have on our security, and some of us aren't exactly sure why we're afraid. And that's where we find Saul. King Saul is the man that we've been talking about the last few weeks, and he has such a tragic story, like I said in the beginning of this series, Consider the Raven. But the thing about Saul is that he allows his life to spiral through these fears. At the start of it, we talked about how he was just kind of fearful that he was not going to be able to do his job adequately. He was comparing himself to another man, and it caused his calling, the thing that God had called him to suffer. Over the last couple of weeks, Ben has been here, and he gave several good talks on fear of rejection, the fear that he wasn't going to do his job well enough and so that people would reject him, and how we often feel that as well in the different parts of our lives. And then last week, Ben spoke on fear of the unknown. And for Saul in particular, he could not stand the thought of not knowing what was going to happen with him, with his kingdom, whenever they were going into battle. And for a lot of us, Ben talked about the ways that we deal with that in unhealthy ways. And so today I want to start with Saul's story. I want us to look at the way that Saul's story ends, the final chapter of Saul's life, and what this has to say about our own lives. Because as we've seen thus far, what happens in Saul's life is often mirrored in our own. I love being able to look at his life because it's not perfect. It doesn't line up with the life of David, who would come later. But it is very real, and so in a lot of ways, we can learn more from that. So jumping into 1 Samuel chapter 31, in just a few verses, we see the way that this tragic life of Saul, the man who was once called by God to do a great job, fell apart. We see how that happens. And so in verse 1, it says, "Now the Philistines attacked Israel, and the men of Israel fled before them." Now, don't forget, these Philistines are the people that the people of Israel have been fighting for a long time. Just to give you a little bit of a reference, as long as we have had troops in the Middle East is nowhere close to as long as the Israelites have been fighting with the Philistines. This is proof that a leader was not able to do his job, the fact that they were still in combat with this army. And so the men of Israel fled before the Philistines. Many were slaughtered on the slopes of Mount Gilboa. The Philistines closed in on Saul and his sons, and they killed three of his sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishah. The fighting grew very fierce around Saul, and the Philistine archers caught up with him and wounded him severely. And so we see that Saul is suffering losses here. Not only has he had a terrible injury due to the archers of the Philistine army, but even more painful, he has watched three of his sons, the boys that he raised and that he loves, die at the hands of his enemies. just picture, it's so easy for us in these passages just to kind of mark this off as an Old Testament story. But put yourself in Saul's life, minus all the failure, everything that you know about Saul up to this point, and you see why he is able to make the decisions that are coming later in this passage. Right here in verse 4, we see this story take that pivotal turn, and this is where we're going to be spending our time today. In verse 4, it says, Saul groaned to his armor bearer, a friend. This is a man that Saul would have been very close to. And he said, take your sword and kill me before these pagan Philistines come to run me through and taunt and torture me. But his armor bearer was afraid and would not do it. So Saul took his own sword and fell on it. When his armor bearer realized what Saul had done, that Saul was dead, he fell on his own sword and died beside the king. And verse 6 just sums it up. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and the troops all died together that day. And the way that this is written, you need to catch up on this or catch this as a reader. We don't need to miss this because they're giving us a very clear message here that Saul's life in this sequence in this short period of time, but also for the whole length of his reign was almost a domino effect. You see, because of Saul's decisions, not only does he die, three people that he loved and his sons die, his friend died, and as it was his whole reign, the people of Israel suffered because of the decisions that Saul had made. And we just wrap up with verse 7. It says, when the Israelites on the other side of Jezreel Valley and beyond the Jordan saw the Israelite army and had fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their towns and fled themselves. The Philistines moved in and occupied the towns. And this is almost just like that stamp of a failing grade on Saul's reign. And it's very sad. If you've been with us for several weeks now, you know that God had specifically, audibly, there's a very short list of men who God confirmed as his own audibly. But he did that for Saul, and there's a very short list of men who can say that. And he had gone from this very esteemed position into this place where he's really known as a guy who couldn't get the job done. We have to fight the urge to believe that Saul was always destined for this demise, though. And this is going to be the point where I ask more of you, more of Vertical Church, than many local churches and national churches ask of their people. You say, why do you say that, Austin? The truth is, we have to believe that nobody is hopeless. It's very easy, and there's a popular opinion right now for people to look at certain folks and say, look, they're hopeless. They don't have an option. They never had an opportunity, and they won't ever. And some people look at themselves and say that. And if that's the case, I'm sorry to hear that. But more often now, people look at people of different age groups. Maybe it's a different voting demographic, and we say there's no hope for these people. And what I'm asking you to do is when you look at the story of Saul, don't see him as a person who had no hope. Look at the alternatives and the ways that his story could have gone different. We can't believe that Saul was without hope, but more importantly, we need to understand that this is not how anybody's story has to end. And we'll deal with suicide in a second. That's a topic in and of itself. But you need to know, if you believe that somebody is without hope, then it cheapens their overall story, and it can mean that any of them can end this way. The reality of Saul's story is that it's linear, just like ours. We saw the steps over the last 4 weeks of what happened in his life. What started in a little insecurity due to a failure led in him not recognizing himself, going back on the decisions that he made, and ultimately he comes to the end of his rope and he can't handle it anymore. And so what I want to do is I want to point out what's going on here. A great example of this is a poem called The Raven, written by a man named Edgar Allan Poe. Many of you are going to be familiar with it. And he takes on this topic of the lurking fear, the lingering fear. In this poem, this raven comes to Poe in the middle of the night and brings up that fear, constantly brings it to his mind while he's alone in the middle of the night with a tapping on his door. How fitting is that? How fitting is it that our anxieties would culminate while we're in isolation, when we're alone at night? I can tell you personally that when my fears, and even more than that, my doubts, my regrets, things that I don't like about myself, those things hit me in the middle of the night, when I feel like I'm by myself, so much so that I may even elbow my wife to wake her up so I just don't have to be alone in that moment. That's a very common thing, and you, if that's the case for you, you don't need to feel like you're alone in that, because the reality is that any worry paired with isolation could be detrimental, and worry comes in that place of isolation. Our enemy is very, very smart. He knows what he's doing, and he knows that we are most vulnerable in isolation. So do not believe and don't make the mistake of thinking that this story of Saul could not happen to you. It's possible to reach a point of depression and anxiety where you are more afraid of fear itself than what the root of that fear actually is. Let me show you what I mean. It's very possible for you to be more afraid of that next doctor's visit than the actual diagnosis that he gave you in the beginning. It's very possible for you to be more afraid of the feelings that a person causes you than the actual hurt that they put you in or through in the beginning. And this chronic fear that we have in our life usually takes place in two ways in particular, and we see both of them in the life of Saul. The first is this. It is that very real point of devastation that leads someone to taking their own life. And before I lose you, let me tell you this. That is much closer to your home than you may actually believe. I know we did a whole series on the fall, in the fall, on depression and anxiety and even suicide, but let me give you a little bit of a reminder, especially in this time where so many people are dealing with so much hurt. Because I'm a student pastor and because I talk with students on a regular basis, I have them in my home, I have them in my office, I get to get meals with them often. I see how many of your students are dealing with pain, sometimes in a very physical way, right under your noses. Oftentimes, the parents do not even know. So even if you yourself are not dealing with your pain and with your hurt and with your fear in a physically abusive way, you need to know that it could happen to anyone. And so what I would tell you right now is combat isolation wherever you see it. And that doesn't just start with you personally, but it goes to the other members of your household. If you see your students beginning to isolate themselves, combat that. Meet them where they are. Bring them in and talk with them about that. If you see that on your spouse, fight for that isolation not to have a place in your home, because it could be much more detrimental than you realize. And even if it doesn't work itself out in that physical way, it could hurt you in other ways. We'll go on to the second option. The second way that this commonly shows itself is that ongoing fear that may not result in self-harm, but like Saul's early years, brings about a general miserable existence. And this is something that we're all kind of dealing with right now, as we have hit this cycle of we work, whether that's from home or whether we go home and take our mask off, we go to sleep and we wake up and face those same fears all over again. Like Saul, God has called us to more than just revisiting our fears daily. And what that means is that we cannot allow ourselves or others to exist in that isolation. We combat that in a communal way, inside your families, inside your small groups, be that in the hangar or the table. Use those avenues that you have been given to make sure that isolation doesn't take place, because that anxiety won't have a place without that. Something that I saw a lot at the beginning of quarantine was something that people, quote, that people were sharing on social media. It started in March, and for a little while, honestly, it just kind of seemed like the Christian thing to do. Maybe I missed the boat on it, but I saw it a lot. It was this fragment of an article written by C.S. Lewis in 1948 called On Living in an Atomic Age. Many of you will be familiar with it. Maybe you even shared it, but I'll read it for you so you can see. He wrote, "This is the first point to be made, and the first action to be taken is to pull ourselves together. If we're all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let the bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep and thinking about bombs. They may break our bodies, but they need not dominate our minds." Now, first, let me hit you with the misconception that, you know, maybe you might not read in a life way about this book, but this is just a fragment of this statement. And C.S. Lewis wouldn't have said, go out without your mask and lick a bunch of public doorknobs, right? He was taking part in rationing during World War II. He was doing things to make sure that others were taken care of. So this isn't a political statement. But the most interesting part of this statement here, without being silly, is this part about doing sensible and human things. So often right now, it is hard for us to think about these sensible things, for us to make sense of everything that the media is giving us and make sense of all the different articles that people are sharing and even make sense of what's going on in our very own lives. When we spend months away from the rest of the world, sometimes it's hard to remember what sensible things once were. And so allow me to remind you the most basic ideas, the most basic sensible idea of who you are and how God views you. In Luke chapter 12, it says this, "Look at the ravens. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for God feeds them. And you are by far more valuable to him than any birds. Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And if worry can't accomplish a little thing like that, what is the use of worry over bigger things?" Later on, Luke would end the statement by saying, "Seek the kingdom of God above all else, and he will give you everything that you need." From the story of Saul's life over the past month, we know that worry, just like Luke said, is not going to add an hour to our life. We watched Saul worry for 31 chapters of 1 Samuel. And ultimately, his life was not lengthened because of it. In fact, he met a tragic death. What this should serve as a reminder is for us to know who God is and what he has done for us and called us to. We can either choose to look at the raven as that reminder, or we can, like Poe, let it keep us up at night and worry about it day in and day out. I would just encourage you to do what I've done in the past month and take a look at this verse whenever you're feeling that. Take a look at this and be reminded how God views you. And oftentimes that's going to be the lens that you need to do those sensible things. Live like you know the Lord. Refuse to let others isolate themselves. And unlike Saul, when we inevitably fail, don't let that be the beginning of your spiral into fear. Do the sensible thing, trust God, and act lovingly out of that. Let me pray for you. Father God, I thank you for this series. It's been so good for me. Personally, it's been good for Ben and I writing it. It's been good for us to get to teach these over the last few weeks, just as a reminder, even to ourselves, God, that you have our best interests in mind. And while we should be mindful of what's going on in the world right now, God, you haven't meant for us to live in fear. I see that everywhere lately, but I don't think that we understand the full effect of that. It's more than just a virus, God. It's more than just being worried about our security for once in our lives. The gift that you've given us is so much greater and so much bigger than that, God, that you have given us a life that we can feel fulfillment. We can feel the fact that you love us and the fact that you've given us a mission to go love others well, God. So I would say thank you for this place. Thank you for a place that, even within these walls, fights isolation actively. We get to chase after men and women who are in a place where they're harming themselves, be it physically or through addiction or just through poor decisions, God. You've given us a place where we can handle those things hands on. God, I pray that we would continue to be about that in this time, that this would be a place that's combating fear because of what we know about you. We love you, God. Amen.